Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
An SEC head coach set up for one specific criticism. Despite it being pure fantasy. Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. How's your Wednesday? I'm having a wonderful time. I'm glad that you're here, and we're going to have a two-hour conversation that the topic will be college football. And I appreciate you joining. I say an SEC head coach, it's Kalen DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer set up for a specific criticism, despite it being like a combination of Dr. Seuss and Wizard of Oz and like whatever. Like, it is pure rainbows and fairy tales and unicorns and fairy dust. When Alabama loses a game this season, now, I don't know that Alabama will lose a game this season. The schedule, if you were to rank Alabama's 12 regular season opponents, there'll be something in the postseason. I don't know what it'll entail, but there'll be something. But the 12 we know, if I just told you by brand name the six that they've got to deal with that are the hardest, folks, look at the configuration of this schedule. Alabama's done an amazing job of putting six, and by the way, there's others as well. But six, by brand, you look at it and go, oh, snap. David, no disrespect. Bama opens at home against Western Kentucky. I think it's a bit much for the Hilltoppers that day. But it does. It's a nice check. They welcome South Florida back for the second game of the home and home. That happens all the time. I'm saying 2-0 at Alabama. But at Wisconsin, then Georgia. The kicker is you played Western Kentucky and South Florida at home first. Then you go on the road, which it's no easy trip at Wisconsin. And then to follow it up with Georgia, yeah, but at home following a bye week. So if you go look through Alabama's schedule, folks, the brand names are there. And even teams like Missouri, who is not a brand name, but they're a bone to be chewed. Got them at home. Like, when was the last time there was a Missouri-Alabama game on the schedule and you're like, hey, it's in Tuscaloosa. That's good. Like, when did you care? They're playing in Como. Fine. It'll be 14.5 instead of 19.5. Oh, yeah, Missouri's 4-1. And hey, you stop talking. They're not winning. They could. But it's in Tuscaloosa. So, like, that's where we are. The league's more difficult and Bama's different. I didn't say lesser. They're going to be lesser. But they're different. And that's where this kicks in. Because against the backdrop of that schedule, in a very doable, workable layout, there is still the likelihood that Alabama loses a game this season. Even if Alabama does not lose a game this season, but Alabama is winning, just not Nick Saban on the sidelines. It's this other guy. That's Kalen DeBoer. We're winning, but it doesn't look the same. The specific criticism that Kalen DeBoer is set up for, we're not playing Bama football. An SEC fan to English Dictionary, they don't run the ball enough. Now, I started my mental response to that with they haven't run the ball, quote, like Alabama in about five seasons. Yeah, I was short. It's 7 years since they've run the ball like Bama. Now, I'm going to give you a measuring stick for this. In college, 200 yards rushing a game. Do you know what that means? It means you got a pretty good rushing attack. If you're Army, Air Force, if you're like Auburn under Gus, 300 a game is approachable. If you're Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech back in the day, you can get up into 272, whatever, but like you're really committed to it at the point that you're really not throwing the ball the way you should. 200 yards rushing per game, you know what that can be? That's a mark for like a SEC champion, national champion, because then we're going to load onto that the fact that we got a NFL quarterback, we got like all this other stuff. But get to 200 yards rushing, especially in the SEC. Do you know what you're doing? You're controlling a lot of Saturdays. So when I said, I mean on the dot, 200 yards rushing per game in college, yes, especially in the SEC, you're really good at it. If we go back to 2007 when Nick Saban first took over the Alabama program, do you remember a guy, Terry Grant? He was a sophomore running back, apparently a great kid, and a good enough kid that he, or good enough running back, he got a scholarship from Mike Shula to play running back at Alabama. And his sophomore year, St. Nick arrives, and Terry Grant outworks everybody, gets the carries. He leads the team in rushing. When you're a sophomore at Alabama and you lead the team in rushing, folks, the clouds part. It is porch swings and apple pie. You are on the express train to the NFL. Terry Grant led the team in rushing his first year, Saban's first year. Terry Grant was fourth each of the next two seasons. It took Nick Saban about 15 minutes to look around and was like, all right, we got to get better running the ball. And we have to bring in premier elite linemen. And you know what? And you know why that was the choice? Well, first of all, it was way more of a thing back in 07, 08, 09. Do you know why specifically it was the call in that situation? Alabama wasn't very good, not even close to Bama standards. Had a weird offense even. Do you remember Doug Rader? I think it was Doug Rader. Was it Dave Rader or Doug, the OC at Bama? Doug Rader. He had Brody Croyle. He would put two wideouts out, I mean out past the numbers. And here was the offense. Send them smoking down the sidelines. Brody, throw it deep. Alabama wasn't set up in 07 to have a dominant rushing attack, and they didn't. Saban had a minute, and he got that thing turned around. We're not playing Bama football, which the translation, they don't run the ball enough. 2011, it's the first year at Alabama that a Nick Saban team averaged 200 yards rushing a game. Finished first in the conference, 215 yards a game. Do you know what that started in 2011 and continued for the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years? They played Bama football, which means they ran the ball a lot, and just dominated people, blasted holes. That 2012 Alabama offensive line, there was a credible, like there were two kind of, I don't know, I say unanimous, close to it, two unanimous first-team All-Americans on that Alabama offensive line. There was a third kid that was an All-American on some team. Folks, All-American offensive line, Alabama, we're going to take three of them. All the rest of you combined can have two. So, like, the gold standard in 2012, that's not real what Alabama was doing. It was real in 2012. They blew people off the line of scrimmage for 60 minutes dang near every Saturday. From 2011 through 2017, they averaged 200 yards rushing per game each of those seasons. Then that ended. Like, that ended 7 years ago. Now, I'm not arguing one way or another about the best approach, that you can't win doing X, Y, Z. I'm not even talking about overall shift in offensive philosophy. I'm saying when it's bombs away and not a consistent ground attack, don't say it's DeBoer's big problem and he's not playing Bama football. if playing Bama football means wood chipper Saturdays for two or three running backs while you bludgeon the defense into uncle, yes, you'll be correct. DeBoer does not have the team playing Alabama football. Neither has Nick Saban. Beginning in 2011, do y'all remember Jostin Fowler? Jostin Fowler, there may be like you had that dog thing where you tilted your head and one eyebrow, you're like, there's some recognition there. But I'm not. Folks, Jostin Fowler was on scholarship at Alabama for 5 years. He never rose probably higher than third on the running back depth chart. I dare say Jostin Fowler was fourth or fifth on the running back depth chart. He got 3 years in the NFL. The Tennessee Titans looked at this guy who I bet Jostin Fowler, unless it was like senior day or something, I would be surprised if he ever got a start. The Tennessee Titans used like a decent draft pick on him. And he stayed in the league for 3 years. And he was Alabama's fifth running back. That's mashing people. Jim McElwain, there were some Saturdays, his play sheet was a cocktail napkin. 2011, Alabama finished first in the conference, 215 a game. From that season on, 227, 206, 207, 200, 245, 251. Beginning in 2018, an era of first-round draft picks at quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback, first overall, a second-rounder in Jalen. There's a reason. 2018, 198 yards. 2019, 168 yards. 183, 150, 195 a game. And then this past year's 172. Alabama's been a good enough running the ball team. And so I'm not arguing the way you should play offense. I'm saying that the Alabama fan base, because of the historical, unreal level of sustained success you've had for a decade and a half, you are spring-loaded for when, unfortunately, not if, when Kalen DeBoer either loses a game or he's winning all of them, but he's just not Nick Saban. All I'm saying is find something else to say than, well, he just doesn't understand Alabama football. Because Alabama football is on a VHS tape. Like, that's about where we are now. It ain't even on a flash drive. So, if you have to go back to 2017, now, he doesn't understand Alabama, then it probably doesn't hold a lot of water. So, criticizing for anything, your choice. But that one is a little bit of fantasy stuff. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will come back, jump into it on this Wednesday next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Wednesday on Chuck Oliver Show. We got fun conversation ahead. We talk college football every day. I was talking Gators yesterday, and the slings and arrows always, they're always, you should pay a little more attention to them when it comes from a, I want to say a reliable source, but someone without an axe to grind, someone who wants you to succeed. That we occasionally, you know, sometimes when you talk to fans, they're the least reliable because their quarterback is the best ever or the worst possible. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when specifically you're getting criticism from someone who wants the program to be great, like Shane Matthews, like Steve Spurrier. When it's Trevor Etienne, who is now a former player, but my gosh, he was boys with Napier going all the way back to Louisiana. He didn't want ill for Billy Napier. I think, you know, if the question was, Trevor Etienne, say negative stuff about the Florida coach. No, I love Billy Napier. I just got to look out for me. I wasn't being used. He and Montrell are boys, and I was always going to be kind of 1A-ish too. Like he gave the answer. So when it comes from folks who are inside and want you to succeed, they are not working an angle. Yeah. So we talked about all that yesterday. We will talk about Florida, their opening spring football. They're back to what Napier loves. We had Dave Bartu on yesterday. They're back to what Napier loves. He got another season with two offensive line coaches. So I don't know. Like 38 Special had two drummers. You know, it works for some people. But I just never understood the nest. Like, if you go back to the mid-'80s, the Houston Rockets tried something, the Twin Towers. Ralph Sampson and Akeem Abdul-Olajuwon. They had two legit, like, seven-foot NBA, like, centers, and it just didn't. It was kind of superfluous. I don't understand two offensive line coaches. They've got it. So we got a lot to talk about with the Gators. We're going to talk Arkansas with John Neighbors, our good friend from the John Neighbors Show. We've been talking to him for several years about the Hogs, and so always love getting him back on. And then we will talk managing editor for USA Today, Fighting Irish Wire, Nick Shepkowski. That's going to be the bottom of hour two. Get some Irish talk in. I was just given a flyover of Nick Saban and his career at Alabama, and it was winning, 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 nothing but. It wasn't winning all the same way. And we had talk at Media Days last year in Nashville that the Alabama offensive line, like J.C. Latham was walking around Media Days telling anybody who would listen, it's like, we may go undefeated this year. We're a great program. We're going to be national champions, and we're going to come out and just blast people on the offensive line. And so many folks, some of them in Tuscaloosa, some of them in the media, some of them with the program, some people around the program, everybody was like, my gosh, this offensive line's back to Bama football. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I was mentioning Joustin Fowler. They finished seventh in the SEC in rushing. And so since Bama, in this case, you know, we're not playing Florida football. That means really good defense and throwing the football, like throwing a dog out of it. We're not playing Bama football. The translation of that is we're not running the ball enough and well and dominating. We hadn't done that in a while. I mentioned Joustin Fowler. I count Joustin Fowler as a fullback. And that's really what he, H-back, motion guy, blocker. I can't remember his actual number, but it was kind of just a big, bulky guy. And I mentioned that he played parts of five seasons at Bama. And he never really rose up the depth chart. He never really lost ground. He had sort of a unique role. Joustin Fowler was this big, bulky guy that, like, you couldn't... It's kind of like a refrigerator. Like, if it weighed that much but was smaller and had a handle on it, you could probably deal with it. But Joustin Fowler, there was no good way to kind of grab him, you know? And he was a good ball player. Just he didn't have a role like anybody. So it was just kind of a different thing. But he was a fullback more than anything else. That's for absolutely sure. If he's a fullback, and there's one other if Will Reichert is drafted, and I think you should be. Heath, do you agree Will Reichert likely be drafted?
You'd think, but you know how it is with kickers. Sometimes only one or two kickers at most get drafted. So it wouldn't. If someone gets drafted, he seems like as good a candidate as anybody.
Folks, this year's NFL draft comes just in time for us to be even more impressed with Nick Saban. If Will Reichert is drafted, and he should be, Nick Saban will have had a player drafted into the NFL at all 22 positions during his time at Alabama. That's just not possible. You could fill out an entire starting 22, and he had somebody drafted, and I mean, at a lot of places, quarterback, left tackle, receiver, I mean, it's just spilling over. But to check off every last box, all 22, and then the kicker. Just an unbelievable run he's had. So, and that's if you're counting Joustin Fowler, and I do. That was his position. It's just a really, it's one more capper, and he's right, you know. So, was Suckup Mr. Irrelevant, or was he an undrafted free agent?
He was Mr. Irrelevant.
Okay, yeah, see, that's how close it was, and he put together what?
More than a decade.
Yeah, so he got a fully vested pension, and he got hardware. And he was, literally, it's the last draft pick. Do we want to use the pick that has less value than anything, or do we want to take any other position than kicker? So that could happen to a guy who clearly is the answer, but if he gets drafted, then that'll just check another box for him. What up, Heath?
All right, so a couple things here. One, I need to correct something. It's my fault because I had Chuck was like, Dave, Doug. I was like, I think it's Doug. It's not Doug. Doug Rader was a third baseman nicknamed the Red Rooster in Major League Baseball.
Played for the Astros back in the 70s?
Correct. Astros, Padres, and Blue Jays went on to manage the Rangers, White Sox, and Angels. So Doug Rader, not the correct answer. Dave Rader is the manager, or not the manager.
The OC at Bama back in, yeah.
Yes, Dave Rader was the former coach at Tulsa, then was the OC at Bama under Mike Shula, and is now, I found out, in the Senate in the state of Oklahoma. He's in charge of the caucus, apparently, in the Oklahoma Senate for the GOP side. So you never know where a guy's going to wind up after his coaching career.
The path from SEC sidelines to the U.S. House.
Yeah, it happens often. Quickly, I just wanted to touch on one thing since we've got a minute here, Chuck. If you're talking about in the beginning there about the challenge that goes with being Kalen DeBoer, being held to the standards of Saban in every way, every little thing you do now, people are going to scrutinize and say, well, that's not how Nick did it, even though the job is to do the job the way you see fit, not the way Nick did it. Here's my thing. If you're Kalen DeBoer, most people have no impression of you. You know, he had been 2 years at Washington, before that, Indiana, Fresno State. Like, I don't know if there's been a coach
that's milk carton stuff
who has been promoted to a job this high profile that people have known less about than him. Even in the case of a guy, we'll say Frank Solich at Nebraska, the Nebraska people knew him because he had been there the whole time. Yeah. This is somebody who is basically unknown to most people and from outside the organization. So my thing is, if you're DeBoer, for the next few weeks, why not have fun with it? Why not mess with people? So like just irrationally, like when somebody asks a question, the most basic question, I don't know, hey, coach, how'd things look out there today? Just like, what are you trying to say? What do you mean by that? And I'm messing with you. I'm messing with you. Because no one knows who you are, so you can establish anything about yourself. Just one time, without any comment, I saw people talking about this, Chuck, that they were happy that the Coke bottle is still on the podium the way it was for Saban.
Absolutely. He respects the tradition. Absolutely, he does.
It's a branding deal, folks. It's not that Nick Saban.
They're paid.
Nick Saban didn't really need that there as like his security blanket. It'll be there no matter who the coach is as long as the check clears. But just one time, without any explanation, put a Yoo-Hoo bottle there. Not even a regular Yoo-Hoo bottle, like a strawberry Yoo-Hoo bottle. Don't say a word about it.
Whatever.
And then take it and just take a big swig at the end of the press conference. Just mess with people. Have some fun, man. Establish who you are.
Whatever his oatmeal cream pies are, because you found out those organically through Nick, and now it's DeBoer's program.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.
College football, Chuck Oliver on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through Wednesday, Chuck Oliver Show. What are you doing today, Chuck? Same thing we did yesterday. Same thing we're going to be doing next week, etc. We talk college football, do a year-round. Half for a decade now. Thank y'all for the blessing. I got to say, in ranking of guys with a poker face, like Billy Napier, he's just a generally pleasant-mannered individual anyway. I think you could lay a hot poker across his forehead, and I don't know if his facial expression would change a whole lot. I've never seen him really get short and snap at people in an angry way. I haven't seen it. I'm sure he does it. I just haven't seen it. Not much. We're about to. It is March 6th, and I bet you right now he's toeing the line. He's tired of hearing about the schedule. Well, imagine by the time you get to like media days and he's on his second question in the big room, it's going to be about the schedule and how does he keep his job against that schedule. There's a lot of football that we'll go into it and the details, and those are fun to talk about too, but it's going to be the schedule and how do you survive that schedule and stay employed. Well, welcome on right now, Gators Online. It's an on-3 deal. Nick De La Torre, how you doing, friend?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
I'm not tired of talking about the Gators schedule at all. It looks like one tasty Saturday after another. Let's just take one bite of the elephant. The opener against Miami. I mean, I'm prone to hyperbole. You know, we're in the media, we're supposed to be, but there's no head coach in America that, I mean, in a soul-crushing way, has to get that win in week one, especially given what's waiting out there the next 11 Saturdays.
Yeah, I think both Mario Cristobal and Billy Napier were hired the same year. They're both under 500. The Florida-Miami rivalry is fierce, and you don't get it every year. So not only is it a rivalry and there's bragging rights in the state of Florida on the line, but it goes longer than 365 days, and they'll play again next year, but it's not an annual rivalry anymore. It's going to be hard. I think heading into this year, both Mario and Billy are selling hope to their fan bases. Hey, you've been patient. We're going to get this thing turned around. Good luck to the losing coach selling hope the rest of the year, and that's even magnified when you're at home. I think there's a little bit less pressure for the Canes because they're on the road. Doesn't mean a loss feels any better for Miami fans, but losing at home is certainly less forgivable than losing a road game. So it's a huge game to start the year, and Billy Napier's had three pretty big games with Utah about his first 2 years, but this Miami game is certainly different given the history of the rivalry.
All right, I don't mean to single out a college kid. I'm just going to use an example. Like Damian George last year, he was the right tackle most of the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he started, and there were false starts, there were holds, there were some great Saturdays, there was a really uneven season. I never really saw his playing time affected. In fact, I'm trying to remember, did he flip to the left side for a second for some reason? But like, yeah. There's supposed to be ramifications for having that uneven a year. There were no choices with that offensive line last year. Where are they now?
Damian George will play guard this year. He moved to left tackle kind of out of necessity. Florida didn't really have tackle depth. When Austin Barber went down, who was the starting left
That's
tackle,
right.
when he went down with an injury, they kind of flipped George there and started Lindell Hudson, who was a senior, super senior transfer from FIU. I don't know that Florida got better in the offensive line. And in the transfer portal era, I like to say you're not shopping at Neiman Marcus for offensive linemen. You're shopping through bargain bins. Typically, five-star offensive linemen go to really good programs. They play for 3 years, 4 years, and then they go play in the NFL. And there's not a lot of movement with elite offensive linemen. So Florida gets Austin Barber back. They get Brendan Crenshaw Dixon from the transfer portal. They returned Jake Slaughter, who I thought was really good, but you lost both of your starting guards, and I think you're going to be young there, whether it's Damian George or Cam Waits or Rod Kearney, who was a redshirt freshman. Najee Harris is another guy I expect to start, but these are all freshmen, sophomores, redshirt freshmen. So I don't know that Florida's line, which was an issue a lot of 2023, got much better in the offseason.
Well, they didn't get better at running back. I mean, you add players, but when you lose ETN, that's a monster talent there. And he basically said, yeah, Montrell and the coach are they're tight, so I was never going to be maybe more than, you know, running back two here. Break down the 1-2-3 now.
Yeah, tough week for Florida in the media with Steve Spurrier's comments and Trevor ETN. So I personally, like, I think, yes, Trevor Etienne is a very talented player. I think it was worse for perception than production, Trevor leaving. Florida gets two really talented freshman running backs in Jaden Ball and Kanan Daniels. Both of them are more than capable of running the football. Treyon Webb from Jacksonville, he returns for his sophomore year, and Montrell Johnson's a senior. You've got a stable of four who I think are very capable. So, yes, Trevor Etienne would make your offense better, but I think him leaving specifically to the team he left is worse for the perception of Florida football than it will be for production. But I think in order, you'll have Montrell Johnson carrying most of the load, Treyon Webb will back him up. And then I'm really excited to see these two freshman running backs, Kaden Daniels, I think rushed for more than 2,000 yards in his junior and senior seasons each of those 2 years. Very talented, and Jaden Baugh as well. So I'm excited to see those guys this week when Florida opens camp.
Yeah, I got to admit, Treyon Webb would step on the field last year, and I knew there was no slice of the pie left. There already wasn't enough pie, but he would step on the field, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is the guy that folks say watch. It's good that he'll have a little bit more of a stage. I watched Trey Wilson last year, and my takeaway was that is the quickest, slipperiest. I'm sure he's got great straight line speed. He's impossible mm-hmm. to get your mitts on. Talk about the plans for him.
Yeah, it's. I wonder what Florida has around him. Trey Wilson is an exceptional player. I said he's probably one of the most exciting, or the most exciting player I've covered since Kadarius Toney, kind of like that
sure.
Chris Rainey
sure.
slippery realm. But I wonder, you know, how much did Ricky Pearsall and the impact that he has, and you have to plan and be ready for him, help Trey. I go back to the year 2020 when Kyle Pitts got hurt. It became easier to cover Kadarius Toney because you can commit more resources to him. So I think Trey has proven he's a really, really good player that could probably start on any team in the SEC. But Florida's going to have to put something else around him. What else on offense can you strike fear in defensive coordinators so that they can't spend all week game planning to take Trey Wilson out? But right now, coming back and looking at Florida's wide receiver room, Trey Wilson is definitely the most exciting player returning.
Yeah, I thought Caleb Douglas was going to be a thing, and now he left to go to Lubbock. Let's talk quarterbacks. And bottom line, like, what's the role? What, like, DJ Lagway, I mean, he's coming in to lay hands on the program, and but what can he do? Because Graham Mertz is still there. Like, what do you think the vision is for the perfect DJ Lagway season?
I think the best thing for DJ Lagway is coming into a situation like this. Graham Mertz is 23 years old. He'll be 24 in December. There's really no threat that Graham Mertz is going to lose his starting job. This is his team. He won over the locker room. And you can get into a situation where, man, this young kid's coming in to steal my job. I'm not going to help him steal it. I think because Graham knows this is his team, he has taken on kind of a mentorship role for DJ. Hey, DJ, this is how you have to handle your schoolwork so that you have time to watch this extra film. This is how we watch film. This is how we digest it. This is how we go through a practice. When we're done with practice, you're certainly a better runner than me. You're going to be getting tackled. Here's where the cold tub is. Here's where the cryo chamber is. Here's the hot tub. This is where you can get a massage. This is how you take care of your body. So I think DJ has a capable and willing mentor in Graham that will set him up for the rest of his career. Now, you have to figure out a way. There's no sense in redshirting DJ Lagway. If he is what we think he will be, he won't be in college for 4 years. And if he isn't, he won't be at Florida because he'll transfer and go somewhere else. I think he's a player you can win championships with, so I think you need to get his feet wet and get him involved in some way. In some not significant, but in some impactful way, in 2024.
Just one more question. I'm laughing, Nick. Nick De La Torre, Gators Online on three. Nick, I'm laughing because we just talked 10 minutes about the offense, and the offense was actually kind of good last year. Like, we never even got around to the defense. I want to ask you one more thing. You've been in the coach's office, I'm sure. Is there like a table set up with a magic marker and those labels that, you know, hello, my name is, and you write your name on it? Like, this can't be good that there's turnover. They lost another analyst I know is going to Wazoo now. What's the mood like around the coach's office with so many new faces?
Yeah, well, I think there's so many people in the office. I had one coach when Billy was hired from a Big Ten school call me and say, like, what did Billy do? I would love to have that many analysts and assistants. Like, how did he get that? So when you have a staff that big, you're gonna get some attrition. But clearly, when Billy did his assessment of 2023, he did not think the offense was the problem. They made moves. Two moves on defense, and then had a coach leave for play calling for a raise and a better job. But they thought the defense was the issue. They thought the strength program was the issue. They're on their third strength coach of the offseason. And I think the defense is Billy's offense almost averaged 30, and they didn't win more games than they lost last year. So clearly defense has been an issue. I go back to when I started covering Florida, those Will Muschamp defenses. The recruiting was a little wonky. You might have had like 10 scholarship safeties, but those defenses were fun. So you add Ron Roberts, you add Will Harris, you add Gerald Chapman. I'm interested to see what they look and sound like on the practice field tomorrow, Thursday, when Florida starts. But certainly the defense has been an issue for probably the last 5 or 6 seasons.
On the Duncan Newsmaker line with Nick De La Torre, Gators Online. That's an On3 thing. Nick, I appreciate your expertise, friend. Thank you, sir.
Have a good one.
All right. Again, On3 is where you go to get the best Gators coverage from Nick De La Torre every single day. Again, Duncan Newsmaker line brings us all of those experts. So, yeah, it's a new co-offensive line coach and one of the analysts on the way out the door. Now, I don't know that when you have two offensive line coaches, one leaves and you still want to have that system, you have to replace him. You don't have to replace the analyst. The analyst is sort of an open-ended number. Do y'all know the story here? Billy Napier, when he was hired, he says you need to increase your support staff, your evaluators, your analysts, etc. He was given an unlimited budget and exceeded it. I'm not kidding. He said, I need an unlimited budget. And they were like, all right, we'll give you an unlimited budget, but then you have to, like, submit something because it's a public university. Unlimited budget to blow out the analyst staff. They said, let's just come up with a number, like just a sky high, and then he went over the number. I want to say with walk-ons, did I get this right? Go look at the Florida team picture. Y'all see this from last year? If I get the numbers wrong, it's just anecdotal. Was it 107 players and 140 non-players with the walk-ons and all? Like, that's a big, 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 big team picture. So that's what he did. That's what Spurrier was referring to when he said, I don't know that because you have the most people, that you have the best people or that they're all doing something.
Yeah, remember with Spurrier, he always took such personal pride in the idea that, you know, Philip Fulmer or whoever was spending all their time in their office and doing all these things trying to beat him. Like, nothing made that man happier than the idea that he's floating in the ocean with Bob Stoops and talking about how somebody else is obsessing over things in their office and they're still going to beat him week after week. So, yeah, saying we've got to have the biggest army possible. If there's one thing that Steve Spurrier did not believe in, it was the idea that we've just got to have the biggest of everything as opposed to what's between the ears there under the visor.
Oh, no, but you do understand your alumni dues are now going to pay for this analyst staff. I mean, like, Heath, that's where your money's going. So I appreciate Nick coming on again, our truest reporter for the Gators. That's Nick De La Torre from Gators Online from On3. All right, we're going to break, continue, wrap up Hour 1 next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Our goal is to go undefeated, and I fully, fully believe that this is the team that can do it. I think we've got every single piece that we need to be able to do that. And if I just continue to take another step this spring and this summer, we just continue to keep our head on straight and just keep on working and shutting out the noise. I don't see how that can happen.
Hey, you don't turn the ball over. How about that? How about you limit just season-ending, game-crushing, checkmate turnovers? That's Kate Klubnik. He's the Clemson quarterback, talking about all these things we need to do. And he's right. If you like old-school sort of reasons to favor a football team heading into a season, and by old school, I mean, based on, I mean, my age, it was the early 80s, late 70s maybe, like 79. I started buying those annual magazines, the Lindy's, the Athlon's, the, you know, whatever the ones that would come out. And the Holy Grail, folks, the only measuring stick, this was basically your vision into the future, returning starters. If you had returning starters, there was nothing more important. Now, by the way, there was value to it because in those days you weren't transferring. I mean, you were the rare bird that would leave. But, I mean, if you played last year and there was eligibility left, well, by God, and I mean that with a capital G, You were coming back next year to our program. Returning starters. It was the beginning and the end of how a team would perform the next year. Clemson's got a lot of returning starters. They don't have Will Shipley coming back. They have a returning starter like really coming. Like Antonio Williams is a returning starter from 2 years ago, basically, who's coming back from injury. So that's a team. And then the folks up front, they have just, I mean, pups on the defensive line. But they look like Clemson defensive linemen. There are old school reasons to like the Tigers. The new school reason to not like Clemson is their quarterback's kind of flaky. And I mean the week-to-week EKG of his play, decision-making, the outcome, raw production, turnover or not. I don't know. It's a grab bag. That's the last thing. Anybody like a championship team, even a conference championship, I'll take the shot. Even a conference like the ACC with a flaky quarterback, not as far as like he may be, you know, out in the field naked at midnight. I'm talking about play more consistently. Be the leader even in the worst of times, at least be the Gibraltar, and that has not been the case. So he's a fabulously talented kid, no doubt about it, but just, I mean, steady everything. My goodness. What up, Heath?
So there's a story that I think could be really interesting, and look, any story that starts somewhere can always be replicated elsewhere, so as casinos spread across the country, as gambling spreads across the country, who knows? This could affect other places too. But right now, I think we're both on the same page on this, Chuck. One of the programs, there's certain programs you just always look at and you say, I don't get it. I don't get how that program doesn't achieve more. UNLV has always been one of those programs. Not because I think UNLV should be contending for a national title, but until Barry Odom this past year, UNLV hadn't even been able to get to a bowl game for like once in like 25 years. It made no sense. It's a high-profile destination. There's a lot of guys, that talented players that come out of Vegas.
There's
that go
money.
To other programs.
There are ball players out there. You're right. There was money in the program, too.
You're right by California. You're right by an Arizona area that has grown a lot of talent in recent years. There's just no reason they should have been terrible. Well, they've got a little taste of it, and now they're really getting into the idea, hey, we could actually do this with football. And so their UNLV collective, I love this name, by the way, UNILV is the name of their collective, they've had a problem. Casinos are obviously the big economic generator out there, but they can't donate directly to NIL. They're not allowed to because they offer betting on UNLV games.
Hi, I'm the UNLV quarterback, and go to Caesars.
Yeah, they're not allowed to do that. However, they think they've figured something out. They're doing something at the UNLV basketball game now called the $150,000 half-court madness. The deal on this is if a UNLV fan wants to be given the chance to hit the half-court shot, they head to the UNILV website and they donate. And for every dollar that they spend, they get an entry in the drawing. The Palms, the casino that's sponsoring it, is then giving them vouchers for the money they're putting in. So basically what they're doing is they're buying free gambling at Palms, and Palms
and the shot potentially at halftime.
Right. And Palms is basically laundering the money through them to give the money now to players for NIL.
See, now it's clean.
And if you do that, if you can harness, because they're already saying if this works the way they think they will, they can do this for every sport going.
Kick a field goal at halftime.
If the casinos can, in effect, launder their money through this voucher program to donate to athletes, I mean, for UNLV, this is the equivalent of if, like, Elon Musk just woke up one day and said, I want to buy me a football program. This could be a gigantic deal maker for them to get money like they have never had before.
Two things. Will this keep Barry Odom off the bowl? That happened.
Odom's looked – well, yeah, I mean – it's part of the deal, though, right? I mean, you're building relationships. So if the casino wants you on the bowl, you're on the bowl.
And secondly, this deal is basically if you're going to gamble anyway, just donate the money for the halftime shot. Whether you're selected or not is irrelevant because here's a dollar-for-dollar voucher to go down the street.
And so my question is then next.
It's great for you. Say the Rio or Palms?
The Palms is the one doing this particular promotion.
It's a fantastic promotion for the Palms.
But they're already saying, like, Caesars and other companies are interested, too. Like, oh, if we could do.
It's a nice hustle.
Because, again, they want UNLV to be good. They want that to be a rallying point for the town, a thing that could bring in business. So for a lot of reasons, I'm curious to see if this works for UNLV, and I'm also curious to see, okay, how quickly can it be replicated somewhere else? You got Indian casinos in places like Florida, Mississippi. Are we seeing something like this with them and the Gators or Ole Miss 2 years from now?
Yeah. Sam Boyd was a sty. Other than that, there was no – and by the way, facilities all kind of used to be ashtrays. But beyond that, and now on the fancy new Raiders crib, so things are looking up for the Rebs.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.